Come on and get it, honey, while the getting's good, good, good.
Hello and welcome to Unapologetically Judith Owen. This is the podcast from Judith Owen. Hi, Judith Owen.
Hello, BB.
And me, BB Lynch. Now, Judith, I'm not suggesting I'm obsessed with you or even a little in love. I mean, let's let the lawyers decide. But I have been watching, reading, listening to all your interviews about your latest incredible album, Come On and Get It. And what comes across loud and clear is the album is, yes, of course, a beautiful homage to and a celebration of the unsung, brilliantly talented women of 40s and 50s jazz and blues. But it's also a celebration of how badass they were, their attitude, how unapologetic they were, and how powerful being unapologetic is. And that's what this series is talking about. I am BB Lynch, and you are Judith Owen.
I certainly am. This is The Power of No, number two. B, two, which one? The romantic years.
I love it.
I love that.
And you are right. We were talking about it kind of across the board, but it's a different animal when it comes to relationships, that, you know, people you know and care and respect, surely.
Yeah. And I, again, if you thinking about these women, thinking about them all, in fact, I would say that the majority were so in control, you know, of their careers, of their music, of their shows, of who they were as artists. I'm not sure they were as in control, or rather had it all sorted out when it came to their personal lives. I mean, that's, you know, apparent. They were all, you know, multi-married and multi-divorced. I think Dinah Washington probably, in some ways, you can just kind of go, yeah. Or you can just think, good grief. I mean, she was married, you remember, 7 to 9 times, yeah. Let's say 8, all by the age of 39. I mean, what does that say? I don't know. I mean, she obviously tore through men. I mean, that's what she sang about. That's who she was. She was quixotic. But obviously, she had that either, you know, the worst imaginable luck, or she just tired quickly, or she was with men that just used and abused and moved on. But she just went through. She just went through. She said no. She went through. And I think Julia Lee, her band were called The Boyfriends because of the inordinate amount of men, boyfriends that she had and went through, the who loved, you know, loved and lost constantly. So these were women who, as is often the case in that period particularly, even if you know, we all know about the stories of actresses at that time and the Doris Days and the Debbie Reynolds and all these women who are just huge stars who were absolutely taken advantage of and ripped off royally, bankrupted by the men that they had in their lives because they wanted to not emasculate the men that they were with.
You've literally just said it. Is it that? Is it if you are unapologetic in so many ways, especially career and in a kind of forthright way, is that unlovable?
Yeah, I think, and these women are great examples of it. It's just like to be a powerhouse, to be that kind of a woman. You know, it takes a great man, a truly great man or woman, to be with a powerful woman who is like very, very much driven by the thing they do, is obsessed with it, is in love with it. To be that large a person, it is. It's like all consuming. It's very self-absorbed and definitely bordering on narcissism, if not entirely. But the truth is that it's very hard to be around that because you often feel like you're just in second position all the time. You're in second place and you kind of are. And also if there's ego involved, and there's always ego involved, and especially especially with those women and with the men that they're with, it's sort of that feeling of, again, it's like, how strong is that man's ego? You got somebody like, Pearl Bailey, married to Louis Belson, and their marriage lasted, you know, the longest amount of time because they were truly great supporters of each other. They were equals. They had that amazing understanding and appreciation. And I think it's, you know, I count myself as being very fortunate to be with somebody who loves me for exactly what I do and who I am and for being an artist and isn't threatened and doesn't feel that we're in competition. You see, that's the thing. It is hard to be around somebody like me. And I will say over and over, it takes a great person to love a badass, a really powerful woman. It does. It really, really does.
Where do we find? I'm stuttering now. You've given me a stutter. Where do we find these people? Oh. You should start a dating agency.
No, honestly, listen.
Yes,
my two setups that I've ever tried with girlfriends were like the wreck of the Hesperus. I've never, ever, I mean, just like it's a Titanic proportions of watch it going down, burning. There goes the Hindenburg. I mean, it's literally two of the worst. How I wasn't like arrested or something for having done this, but they were almost criminal proportions. I'm not even going to go into it. It was so upsetting. But both times it was just, I had to just lie down for a day and try and learn to breathe again. It was chronic. So I'm not doing any of the matchmaking, but all I can say is very, very hard to find that person. I'm amazed that I ever did, because I never wanted to be married, because I didn't think it was possible. I mean, I put up with men I put up with the kind of shit that speaks again of somebody who has such a low self-esteem and feels like they're so, I knew right from the start, I had boyfriends who just couldn't bear that I was a musician, couldn't bear that I loved something so much that drove me so much, that were constantly competing with me, were constantly cheating on me, were constantly like really behaving badly. And I put up with it because I felt like that was all I deserved. And that, you know, somehow I understood, because it was so hard to be with someone like me. I was so awful, and it was so difficult.
Oh my God, that's terrible.
No. I don't want this to go down. So I'm gonna share something funny with you. My experience was finding out once with somebody I had a long-term relationship with, that they were really, really, really into excessively, morbidly obese woman eating chocolate. Now, what happened was, I found the German pornography in the wardrobe, because I was rootling around like you do, you know, to find out who this person really was. It was only a second date. And I went rootling around the house.
Second date.
And it was going well. And I find a stash of the most heinous pornography. And it's just like nothing to do with sex. It was just eating and morbidly obese. And that's, you know, there's something for everybody, and that's great. And if that's your thing, that's great. I managed to tell myself that somehow that would not affect our lives, or had anything to do with me whatsoever, or who would undermine me in any shape or form sexually. And I continued, and it was a nightmare. And I put up with it. And because I just thought, no, but he loves me. And okay, it's like the sex is terrible, but he loves me, you see. And it's hard to get a guy who can understand or stick with a woman like me. So that's what I'm talking about. That was another one. A friend of mine dated somebody who could only get aroused if you read the Financial Times to him. This is not a joke. You're asking me to set you up. Just see how wrong this is. Now, I was very young at this point. This is like years and years ago, by the way. And she did it. And she continued with this guy because she was like, well,
she would read the FT to him.
Yeah. I think stocks and shares and shit. And he'd get aroused.
Isn't it bulls and bears? On the stock exchange, isn't it bulls and bears?
Listen, I had to constantly eat stuff while I was having sex with this bloke. So don't judge her. You know, I mean, it's like, how fucked up can that be, where you think, I'm just lucky to be with it? How low can a person's self-esteem be?
That's the fucked up bit. The kink is whatever your kink is, house of no judgment, it's consent, that's fine.
And let's just get back to the topic and what I should have said at that point if I'd had my own sense of self-worth, is I should have said to this guy, this is what you're into, right? And he would have said, yeah. And I would have said, look, that's great. What you need to be with is a woman. That's who you need to be with, is that. You need to find that. I know that's just your thing, your kink. That's what you think about during sex. But that's not going to work for me. That's going to make me feel terrible. And so you're a great guy and you're wonderful, but this is not going to work, okay? But listen, I wish you all the luck in the world, but it's going to crush me. So, okay?
Yeah.
And that... Yeah. Is what an adult does. But I wasn't an adult. I was an unformed young person who only knew that every man I dated loved me at first for what I did, and then hated me for it, and wanted to crush me for being such you know, so driven by my music and being that person. So I got to the point where it was sort of like, I'm just like, you know, that feeling of like, oh, I'm lucky. And again, oh. I didn't want, honestly, baby, I didn't want to hurt his feelings or make him feel like some weirdo. Well, guess what? Hello. As opposed to me just saying, this doesn't rock my boat. This doesn't work sexually. You're great. Thank you. Goodbye. That's the only thing. I knew it was wrong. I knew it was hurting me. I knew it felt terrible. But for the life of me, it was like I was terrified to.
Because you were grateful to have someone.
I was just grateful to have somebody who I was intimate with, who loved me, who was kind and loving and gentle. We had great fun and it was wonderful. And it was sort of like, I can deal with this. I can. Like, that's the other thing you tell yourself is, I'm strong enough. I can deal with. No, you can't actually. You see, you got to be honest with yourself as well. And say no to yourself, you see. That's what I believe.
And being honest with the person, because so if this is too personal, tell me, should we have a code? Do we need a safe word?
Stop.
Oh, no, I like that. It's quite catchy. I'm going to write that down just so I don't forget it. You know, Miranda Kane, my former co-host on Good Sex, Bad Sex, her safe word is BB Lynch.
Oh, that'll do it.
Okay. That'll do it. So I know you've been with Harry for 30 years and that's, you know, I mean, that's it.
An eternity.
I can't get a second date, right? My last relationship ended the day after Diana died. I cannot get a second date. So anyone in any kind of relationship, it blows my mind. I think it's extraordinary. But you told me something. And again, if this is too personal, just say my name. Was that you weren't even unapologetic about depression with Harry because you didn't want to ruin whatever he thought you were.
Yeah, I was smart enough when we first got together, and I realized that if I was actually honest with him and revealed how unbelievably ill I was and how depressed I was, because I knew that he told me that he'd been, you know, his prior, he'd been with a girlfriend who had been very depressed and troubled, and I thought, oh Christ, and so I basically turned into Pinocchio, and my nose grew into a long branch with a leaf on the end of it, as I said the words, oh, that's not anything that I've ever had a problem with myself. And so I was smart enough to know, quite frankly, that I couldn't jump that one on him immediately, because he would run for the hills, you see. You know, again, that was like, that was lying to myself. You know, I know who I am. I knew who I was. I knew exactly what I came in with. And of course, I hadn't reached that point in my life where I was able, as I am now, to be able to lead with that and just say that this is who I am. This is who I am. Do you think you can deal with that? And, you know, as it turns out, my husband would have been absolutely on board and would have been okay, because he's that kind of a person. And there's a lot to be put by. You know, we mince around the truth because, again, we don't want to scare someone off. We don't want to hurt someone. We don't want to offend someone. We want to, like, you know, sort of present ourselves in the most flattering light. But you can really get caught out on that one, because ultimately the truth will out. And when it's something that big, that serious, you want to get, it's kind of better to show. They'll find out regardless. You know, the first time I smashed the kitchen up, I think the penny dropped, and I really feel like that's going to come anyway. You know, you're gonna figure that one out. It's just the ability to stop things before they get. You know, again, it's like to be able to have your needs met, to not pretend that you can do something you can't.
Yeah, it's so important. And that strength of self, or that strength of self-knowledge and self-worth that would hopefully follow on from that, isn't just for romantic relationships, is it? It's for friendships too.
No, it's in friendship too. I mean, how many of us have had like conversations with friends and thought, I don't agree with that at all, and that's making me feel bad, or no, I don't want to do that, or how can I get out of this? And it's always down to the hurting people's feelings, messing it up, having confrontation. It usually is mostly about hurting people's feelings. And I think there is, again, a nice way to be able to say this. And that is, listen, I love you to bits, but that doesn't feel right for me.
It works both ways, though. Can I give you an example of something that happened to me recently?
Yeah.
And I really love your take on this. So someone who was a really good friend of mine, who I loved as a friend, really loved them, very new friend, but some friendships just kind of happen, don't they? And you feel like a real connection. It was lovely.
Yeah.
And they were going through a lot work-wise and a lot time-wise and a lot commitment-wise and decided they wanted to kind of just pull back from everyone. And it very much changed the entire shape of, regardless of everyone else's relationship with this person, my relationship with this person very much changed. It felt like the goalposts moved. And it had gone from a relationship which we would speak often. There'd be voice notes throughout the day, often from that person, actually from that person to start with. So a lot of the attention and the building of this relationship came from this person. I know I said I'm in a court of law and I'm not, but I just want to give all the backgrounds to be fair to everyone involved. And so it would be like voice notes and calls and meeting for coffee and chats, a really lovely nurturing thing. Then it suddenly changed and I was suddenly like, oh, we don't do the calls now. Okay. We don't do the voice notes. Okay. Without a conversation, which I felt like wasn't the right way to do it. Then I was aware that there'd be contact like once a month. And I'd be like, and this has gone from five voice notes a day. And I'm like, okay, it's now once a month. And I stomached it because I just thought, okay, this person's going through something and this is what this person needs to do. This person is being unapologetically looking out for themselves. They are putting up their boundaries unapologetically. And I'm not going to tell someone they can't do that because that's their call. That's okay. But this carried on for a few months of like going from five voice notes a day, one 15 minutes long, if I may say that, not from me, and then to meeting once a month for a decaf. And then during these once a month for a decaf meetings, oh, by the way, as well, several times I'd seen this person kind of out and about and said, oh, you know, should we go for a chat? I feel like this is, it's all a bit weird between us. And that person was going, no, nothing's wrong. So I felt like I had again tried to make this okay, see what it was. During this, our final decaf, I said, it really hurt my feelings, how this all changed. And then it was, I knew you were angry, your tone changed, blah, blah, blah. And this person, and it rightly said, I'm not going to apologize for putting myself first. And I replied, and I'd like to know what you think about this. I obviously think I'm right in this situation. You absolutely can put yourself first, but I'm not going to apologize for saying I had a response to it.
Oh, that's so right.
I'm not going to apologize for saying what my boundaries are, which is I'm allowed to have a response. You've changed totally the dynamic and everything of this relationship. And I've stomached it. When I then said, really honestly, it kind of, and not aggressively, not in a confrontational way, but some people say any sentence that isn't you're brilliant as confrontation. I'm not saying that person does. Saying that it hurt me, it upset me, and to then be shut down and accused of being angry, that it just blew my mind because it was, the rules weren't fair for both, they weren't the same for both parties. What do you think, Judith Owen, discuss?
No, I am going to put my, I can put my therapist hat on here because I know clearly what happened and the reason she overreacted to you saying it hurt me, because that's the truth. After you've said, I don't blame you for wanting to put yourself first, you're right, but I just want to say that upset. The fact that she got up so upset is proof that she was feeling, that's projection, and that she was probably feeling some level of responsibility, awareness, even guilt about the fact that this had happened, that she had pulled away and she was feeling bad about it. That's what people do. And then they overreact when you call them on it. But I think it's actually, so you were right to say what you said. I think if she was, if she had been more able to, and let's be honest, we've all done that, by the way. Every one of us has done something and let it go away silently, you know, and sort of not knowing how to say, I don't want it to be like this anymore. I need to actually spend more time doing this, or I just want to back off a bit just because it's taking so much of my time. And it's just, none of us know how to say it, but guess what? Wouldn't it be marvelous if we could? Wouldn't it be marvelous if we could just say, you know what, I love you to bits, but I'm going to just be going back a little bit or taking it down when it comes to communication, just because that's what I need right now. So don't be upset by it. It's just what I need right now. Wouldn't it be marvelous if we could say that, and that we could say something like, you know, I really hurt, really made me feel, I just felt hurt when I didn't hear from you. And I know, I get it, but I just want to, you know, that's the evolved way to communicate, but we're not used to doing that. And so people get upset, really upset.
That's it. You should charge.
Dr. Owen, that will be £5.50, please.
£5.50.
Sorry, £500.50. Sorry. I suddenly realized how much I'd undone my greatness. I cheapened my art. It's incredible how I've spent my life just dodging bullets this way and not being able to just say what I'm thinking, say what I mean, say what I need, ask for what I need. That's the hardest of all. It's like I'm some, you know, voracious, greedy, horrible, spoilt thing. I'm just asking to be acknowledged as a human being with needs. And I think that's what all of us have to work on constantly. Again, I know two people that came into this world able to do that, able to do it really straightforwardly. And I know an awful lot of men that can do it. But it's not something that comes naturally to many of us.
Do you think it is different between men and women?
Oh, yeah. I think it's different because my example of me, I always remember my husband, it's like, he told me exactly who he was within 20 minutes and I told him exactly who I wasn't. I'm not joking. It was extraordinary.
How do you mean?
He told me who he was and what he did and what he was like. And I mean, not everything, but you know, he just very clear. And I spent 20 minutes telling him what I wanted him to hear about me. I wanted him to hear that I wasn't a depressed, fucked up person. I wanted him to hear that I was really put together. And I wanted him to believe that. And he did, because men are quite straightforward that way, I believe. Unless they're messing you about and they're just like, you know, on the pull. But genuine guys, great guys. I think they're very, women skate around this truth, this being able to be straightforward, and hopefully many more women are able to do it these days. But I think it's because we don't know how, like I said, we don't know how to be, to actually be fully unapologetically ourselves and to be just open, transparent with it and say who we are. It would save a lot of time. There's no doubt.
I guess there's a sense of there'll be a price to pay if you
yeah.
are.
Well, it comes back to the same thing, which is
like, so the situation I just had,
I mean, and there is a price to pay sadly, when you do it wrong, you know, when you do it incorrectly, it was a price to pay for me when finally it became clear who I really was. It was like, then, I mean, luckily I was with this amazing man, so that was okay, but it could have gone hideously, hideously, hideously wrong. But I'll come back to the pleaser. I'll come back to the pleaser and say that I know a lot of women have sort of say things that how they want to be seen, or they skew it, or they deliver it in some way because they want to please. You know, they want it to happen. They want it to work. They want to, you know, that's what they want. They don't want to lessen the chances of it not working out or something going wrong. I mean, I would hope that things had changed, but I do think it's extraordinary how, when I look back on, you know, I hope young women aren't doing what I did, but I have a horrible feeling they probably are. It's just the same thing, you know, that film was that he's not really into you, or that, what is that thing called? You know, he's not that into you.
Yeah, it's just not just that like into
the,
you.
All the, you know, but the call, does it, what do you think the call? Oh, he's definitely, yeah, he's just, you know, he's just busy. And all these excuses, the excuses that women still, young women are still doing. And so, do you think he like, listen to the tone on this voicemail? What do you think of this text? What do you think? What's the tone? Oh, he's definitely, he's just, you know, no. No,
I want you to do therapy. I want you to matchmaking. I want you to do couples therapy. We need to discuss that show in full because I'm obsessed with Una, and dream therapy. So the other night, just clear your mind and tell me what the first thing you think. Right, the other night I dreamt I was shopping for continental pillowcases, and Suella Braverman was wearing Rishi Sunak like a nappy.
There's a few feelings I'm. There's a few things I'm thinking right now. Mostly terror, pity, and a certain level, but definitely a certain regret that we're doing this today.
Arousal?
Certainly an amount of regret. And also with a soupçon of disappointment.
Just regret. I'm going to be unapologetic in my dreams.
Yeah, my dreams have always been absolutely shocking and terrifying and violent, and they're more nightmares, really. Let's not call them dreams. And what goes on, I guess, in your subconscious is such an extraordinary thing. But mine are always technicolor. They're terror-filled, and they're always imposter syndrome. And I'm about to give a concert, and I can't even remember how to play one note of my own song, and all those kind of things that are just the flop sweat shocker. And then my fabulous husband is who seems to be so amazingly balanced that maybe this is the difference between us. Those are my dreams. And he woke up once and said, I can remember one of my dreams, because he could never remember it. And I said, oh my God, what was it? And he went, I went to the post office and they'd run out of stamps.
Oh, so, okay. What's my take home?
Your take home is,
about being unapologetic in love and relationships. What's my take home?
Your take home is the same thing as last week's episode. It really is about when it's wrong, when it isn't right, when it's weird, when they don't get you, when you're feeling uncomfortable. The answer is, thank you so much. This is just, you know, this isn't a fit, and you're great. You're a great guy, but I'm not the one for you, am I? And you're obviously, this is not meant to be, but thank you. And move on, and that's it. And I think it's, I think again, don't apologize or be apologetic in that way of, you know, when you go into it with a person, that idea of wanting to show, we all want to show our best selves, but you know, you don't need to. I mean, you don't want to tell them everything, Bibi, you know, obviously, because some of the things you'd like naming your furniture, I wouldn't go in with that one. I wouldn't start on that. Okay, that would not be my opening line, Paul Daniels. I'd keep away from that one. I'm just saying. But, you know, somebody's, what we all want are the great people, the great men, the great women, the great people who accept us for exactly who we are. And I think we all need to go into that thinking that way, which is, look, this is me. This is who I am. You either get me or you don't. And you appreciate all that I am in, you know, as big and small and everything else that I am as a person, for everything that I do, for everything that I bring. Because if you don't see it right from the start, if you don't get it, and if I don't show that to you, it's going to come out at some point, and then the shit's going to hit the fan. That's the message I'm giving you right now. I wish with all these women, you know, times were different. You weren't encouraged to be a big, bold woman in any aspect. The fact that these women, you know, struggled with their emotional lives, their romantic lives, doesn't surprise me at all. But, you know, the fact that there is Pearl Bailey with Louis Belson having that life, that long, amazing marriage together, being equals, appreciating each other for who they were, not being in competition, and being absolutely the people they were meant to be. I think that is the lesson. That is really it.
I love it. Oh, you had just made me feel so happy. And as is your gift, you've literally just pulled that away from me.
Well, if I could help you in some small way, and that was small, then...
Thank you. Thank you for your time. Are you still working on that song about me?
She's a loser? Yeah.
I've been, the one with the didgeridoo middle-aged.
Yeah, didgeridoo middle-aged. She's a loser. I think it's a powerhouse. You know, I say this stuff as in jest. I adore you. I think you're the shit. You know that.
You adore me. You're obsessed with me. When you write the song about me, for the love of God, do not rhyme BB with wee wee.
If you knew anything about lyrics, you wouldn't even have said that. One has bees in it,
okay,
and the other doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, I'm going to say goodbye, and I'm going to do a little outro because I'm a professional, and I apologize. God, your face, you're angry now. It's all right. I'm sorry. So that's it for this episode. We'll be back next week, maybe, with another huge thank you to you for listening, and to you, lovely Judith, for making this oral joy possible. Don't forget to come on and get us next week, and to follow and give the series a review. Unapologetically, Judith Owen is produced by Pineapple Audio Production, and we will see you next time. Sorry about that, Judith. I'm sorry, I'm an idiot. Love you.